This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Uganda's Ministry of Health says the first confirmed case was a child who crossed into Uganda with other family members.
That's reporter Catherine Nambi on the first Ebola case to cross into Uganda from the DRC. Details next. Also, Ethiopia's special envoy to Sudan says Sudanese protesters and the Transitional Military Council have agreed to resume talks soon. And Cameroon has deployed additional troops along its northern border with Nigeria and Chad after an attack by the terrorist group Boko Haram. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Uganda is on high alert after Health Ministry confirmed an Ebola outbreak in the Kasisi district at the border with the Democratic Republic of Congo. This after samples from a 5-year-old who had crossed to Uganda from the DRC for treatment tested positive for the hemorrhage fever before dying last night. The number of confirmed has risen to 3 after 2 other suspected cases also tested positive. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Uganda's Ministry of Health says the first confirmed case was a child who crossed into Uganda with other family members through the Bwera border post to seek medical treatment at Kagando Hospital. The child was returning to Uganda with his mother, who had gone to nurse an Ebola relative in DRC. The child who died last night had presented Ebola-like symptoms, prompting his isolation and testing. Jane Ruth Acheng is Uganda's health minister.
The same night the family entered Uganda, the teams from the DRC alerted us of the presence of contacts of a deceased Ebola case who had crossed into Uganda and provided their names and telephone contacts. All our health facilities were quickly informed to be on alert. The child was detected by the health workers. A blood sample was drawn and sent for testing at Uganda Virus Research Institute, and the sample tested positive for Ebola.
The World Health Organization said two of the other suspected cases had their samples taken when they developed symptoms similar to that of Ebola and have also tested positive. Acheng says a rapid response team comprising officials from Ministry of Health, World Health Organization and Centers for Disease Control has been dispatched to Kasese to identify other people who may be at risk and ensure they are monitored and provided with care if they also become ill.
We have 7 suspects, but we are keeping a very close eye on the family because we have a complete family that came in from the DRC who are very close contact of the first case that passed away. For now, they have not developed any signs and symptoms, and the teams are monitoring them very closely.
She notes that the response team will be vaccinated as a precautionary measure.
From Friday, we shall begin vaccination again of frontline health workers, other workers, and ring vaccination for the contacts. So far we have listed about 50 contacts, and all these contacts are eligible for vaccination because it is protective. If they get vaccinated now within a period of 10 days, they will develop immunity. And if they haven't, develop signs and symptoms, then it offers them good protection.
Uganda has had 5 Ebola outbreaks since 2000. These are the first confirmed cases outside the DRC since current outbreak was reported in August. As of June 4th, 2,025 confirmed and probable cases have been recorded in the DRC, with 2/3 dying. Ebola is a deadly illness with a fatality rate of up to 90%, according to WHO. It is transmitted through blood and bodily fluids, including from infected animals, such as chimpanzees, gorillas, fruit bats, monkeys, forest antelope, and porcupines. This is Catherine Nambi For VOA News in Kampala.
Sudan's transitional military council and pro-democracy protesters have agreed to resume talks soon to resolve the country's political deadlock now that the opposition agreed to end its civil disobedience campaign and the junta promised to release all political detainees. That is according to Ethiopia's special envoy to Sudan, Mahmoud Dirar, who is mediating the dispute. Dirar told reporters at the Ethiopian embassy in Khartoum that moves by both sides was an effort to build confidence and trust between the two parties. Dirar says both parties have expressed a willingness to resume negotiations as the only means to reach to a political settlement. He says when the parties resume face-to-face talks, they will not renegotiate issues already agreed to earlier, including a 3-year transitional period. Dirar says the parties will discuss forming a sovereign council to run the country. He also says the military and the opposition have agreed to avoid any insult or escalatory statements that would hinder the initiative. The two sides did not indicate when the talks would resume. The talks broke down after more than 100 protesters were killed and dozens more were injured by Sudan's rapid support forces, part of Sudan's old Janjaweed, during a June 3rd crackdown. The military junta suspended talks with the opposition and arrested dozens of opposition members, including SPLM North Deputy Chairman Yasir Arman and two other SPLM officials who were deported to Juba following mediation by Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. Some Sudanese citizens say it would be good if the military junta and opposition resume negotiations and reach a final political solution that will allow the country to move forward. 39-year-old Hilal Ahmed, who resides in the Haitoura Omdurman neighborhood, says he doesn't expect progress because each side works for its own interests.
If all of them or both of them, they drop down their own issues or their thinkings. So at that time, I can say that maybe they will go. But currently, I don't think so.
Muatiz Hamid, who lives in Ombada in Omdurman town, says he hopes the two sides will return to the negotiating table with a new spirit after the recent events. Speaking in Arabic, Muatiz urges all parties to work towards building a new Sudan.
The most important thing when talks resumed is that people should trust each other and they should all work to build a new Sudan that our people have been longing for over the last 60 years.
Muatiz blames Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates for fueling conflict in his country by giving guns to the military and funding the Sudan Rapid Forces. Speaking in Arabic, Muatiz calls on the African Union to take the lead and restore stability in Sudan.
Our main problem now is caused to us by Saudi Arabia and UAE. If they don't stop interfering with our internal affairs, Sudan will not be stable. Our hope now lays on the African Union and upon the Ethiopian Prime Minister, who is trying to bring the two parties together.
Public and private offices have reopened today. Mangu Ugel in Khartoum contributed to the story. Cameroon has deployed additional troops along its northern borders with Nigeria and Chad after an attack by the terrorist group Boko Haram on the town of Darak killed at least 13 soldiers and an unknown number of civilians. Authorities say it is the worst attack in a year and the seventh Boko Haram assault in 3 weeks, indicating a new surge by the Islamist terrorist group. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Hili Alifa on the border with Nigeria.
Troops from Cameroon's Rapid Intervention Battalion, B, saying that they will defend the country from Boko Haram terrorists with honor and loyalty. Cameroon's military on Wednesday confirmed the Islamist militants killed at least 13 of its soldiers and destroyed three military boats in a Sunday attack on Darak, a town bordering Lake Chad. Local media reports said 21 soldiers and dozens of Boko Haram fighters were killed and 45 suspects arrested by Tuesday evening. Fleeing villagers told a reporter Boko Haram killed at least 40 civilians and troops. Cameroon's military did not immediately confirm civilian casualty figures, but acknowledged the Boko Haram attack was the deadliest in at least a year. Colonel Zikum Azi, one of the area commanders, says they deployed additional troops to the border to safeguard Cameroon's territory from the surge in Boko Haram attacks.
It is difficult to have a mur de défense along the frontier.
He says since it is difficult to build a security wall across the entire border, they will dig trenches that are up to 6 meters deep and 4 meters long in areas they consider very dangerous. The aim, says Azi, is to stop the terrorists from either penetrating or escaping. Cameroon's military has occupied most of the risk zone, he adds. As Cameroon's military reinforced the conflict zone, the local population was fleeing in fear. 37-year-old Salihu Jumaila is receiving treatment at the government health center in Hilialefa.
Je causais avec ma collègue.
She says while people were running in all directions, she, her friends and some other women sought safety in a village school. While taking cover in a classroom, Jumaila says she heard a loud explosion. She then discovered wounds all over her body, she says, and saw that parts of the school walls had crumbled. Jumaila says Cameroon's military evacuated her and 12 other women from Darak to Hilialefa on Monday as fighting was intense. The governor of Cameroon's far north region, Mijiyawa Bakari, says Boko Haram has launched at least 7 large-scale attacks within 3 weeks.
C'est le lieu pour moi ici d'appeler encore l'attention des populations.
He says he is once more calling on the entire population of his region to work in collaboration with the military to make sure that security returns in the shortest possible time. Self-defense groups in risk zones must be reactivated, says Bakari, and entry through all borders filtered. He says any suspicious movement should be immediately reported to the military. The United Nations says Boko Haram's decade-long fight has left more than 27,000 people dead and displaced nearly 2 million in Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria. A joint task force of the Lake Chad Basin Commission has been fighting the insurgents with troops from Benin, Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Hilialefa, Northern Cameroon.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Uganda is on high alert after the health ministry confirmed an Ebola outbreak in its own Kasisi district at the border with the Democratic Republic of Congo. Ethiopia's special envoy to Sudan says Sudanese protesters and the Transitional Military Council have agreed to resume talks soon. And Cameroon has deployed additional troops along its northern border with Nigeria and Chad after an attack by the terrorist group Boko Haram. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Uganda hosts Africa's largest refugee population, 1.25 million people, with two-thirds fleeing conflict in South Sudan. Last year's peace deal raised hopes for some South Sudanese that they could soon return home. But the fragile peace has discouraged many from leaving Uganda's refugee camps despite struggles for adequate aid. Halima Atumani reports from Adjumani, Uganda.
James Gwemawera joins other South Sudanese elders for a board game at the Maji refugee settlement in Uganda. It's been 6 years since he arrived here after losing his cattle during fighting in South Sudan. His family scattered to different refugee settlements in Uganda, and he is still wondering when they can all go home. I need to first witness peaceful resettlement of my people back home with no war or tribal conflict before I can return. But now I can't think of going back. Things are still bad. I can't leave. 63-year-old Madelena Moraya hopes to return to South Sudan one way or another. My husband died and was buried in South Sudan. My other children are buried there. When I die, I want to be buried beside them. There are more than 800,000 South Sudanese refugees in settlements just inside Uganda, more than four times the number in 2016. Muse Chweru, Uganda's State Minister for Refugees, says Uganda's ability to help is being challenged.
We had never known that at any given time we'll host over 1 million people. We had always oscillated between 200,000, 300. That was what we knew, even at the peak of displacement from DR Congo, from Rwanda, and from Burundi. But when South Sudan collapsed, then we received refugees surpassing 1 million, and that overwhelmed our systems.
In May, Uganda and the United Nations Refugee Agency appealed for $927 million in funding to address refugee needs until 2020. The appeal is complicated by the alleged misuse of aid and the exaggeration of refugee numbers, which prompted the dismissal of four Ugandan officials and launched several investigations. Joel Butcher of the UN Refugee Agency also says donors no longer see the situation as an emergency.
We're falling short of what is really required in terms of access to basic services, such as education, water is slightly better covered, health slightly better covered, but education, needs for environment, energy, protection, we're falling short of really what the refugees deserve and need.
For the time being, South Sudanese refugees in Uganda will get by on basic services and wait for the day when it is safe to return home. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Adjumani, Uganda.
The Gambian government, in collaboration with the World Bank, has announced a $31 million social safety net project to combat poverty in a economically distressed districts. Reporter Panderambai tells us more.
Rising poverty has left about 60% of Gambians living below the national poverty line. The project has been jointly funded by the World Bank and the Gambian government, with the World Bank committing a grant of $30 million. The Gambian government says it will also contribute $1 million. Ellen Imnas is the World Bank country representative for the Gambia.
I would like to note that the project is firmly anchored in the National Development Plan and the National Social Protection Policy, as it supports government's commitment to deliver assistance to the poor and vulnerable and make sure all Gambians can develop and achieve their potential.
The World Bank grant will help the government establish a social protection secretariat and facilitate the creation of a social registry. The secretariat would be under the auspices of the Office of the Vice President. The project would be supervised by the National Nutrition Agency, NANA, in collaboration with the Department of Social Welfare and all the agencies in the country.
The project obviously builds on these efforts and takes these efforts further to the poorest districts of the country and to the poorest households in these districts. And it does so through NAFA program of small cash transfers to the households so that these needy people can buy what they need, buy food, but also can get access to the social services.
Gambia's gross domestic product, GDP, has been estimated to be over $1 billion. The country is among Africa's heavily indebted countries. Maud Seka is a permanent secretary at Gambia's finance ministry. Seka is of the view that for the project to emerge successful, there must be a proper monitoring mechanism.
I think it's also important, like we discussed, to also have some inbuilt mechanism for sustainability, because a project would have failed if it's implemented and then people are still stretching their hands for cash transfers. I think some form of economic independence should be given to them so that over time they can also have some source of livelihood which will sustain the whole program.
The World Bank's International Development Association, IDA, was established in 1960. Its goal was to help the world's poorest countries with grants to help combat poverty. The bank says 39 countries in Africa have benefited from the project since its inception. For VOA Africa, this is Pan Derimbai reporting.
Officials in Mali say 35 people were killed in a 7-hour massacre in an ethnic Dogon enclave in the central Mopti region. They say the dead in the village of Sobanda on Sunday included 24 children. Seeking to avoid revenge attacks, the government urged local people not to fall into the trap of guilt by association and revenge. Tensions have been high between Dogon and ethnic Fulani. The Fulani are primarily cattle breeders and traders, while the Dogon are traditionally farmers. Last month, the UN peacekeeping mission in Mali reported at least 488 deaths in attacks on Fulanis since January of 2018. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the CEOs of Kenya and South African Airways have announced their resignations. Does this signal a lack of progress for African airlines? Africa's airline woes on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Hello, this is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.